Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
Yeah, those tones are proof enough. You guys know what this is. A year end show.
Yeah, but with
best of.
Yeah, but with whom? You never introduced yourself.
Oh, Gabe.
With Gabe. Yeah you did
and
it.
And Gabe.
You did it every other time this year. I'll give you a free pass on this one. End of the year. Yeah, this is our end of the year wrap up. Most of our listeners around the world will be taking it easy right now. We hope.
Mm-hmm.
Having a nice time in the Northern Hemisphere, keeping warm or keeping cozy, Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
Maybe out and about hiking, not sure.
It gives us a perfect chance to thank you guys for writing us this whole year. It is so important to us and also to this show. It informs some of the topics that we go after and the personal stuff. Jennifer, Mark, David, Avis, Arnie, Carolyn, Cindy, Cameron, Kristen, you guys all wrote in when the topic was about smoking and quitting smoking with your tips for me. Thank you for that.
Yeah, what we want to do, just real quickly here, or what we have done, I suppose. Gabe was listing off names there for people who'd written in about a particular episode that we did. It was also up on YouTube about a novel experiment going on right now down in Mannheim, Germany, to help people quit smoking. It involves some sort of cognitive behavioral therapy and some HIIT training. And y'all wrote in on that one. We went back, though, through so many emails. And I was just saying that to you, Gabe. I was scrolling backwards through them, trying to get back to the beginning of the year. I couldn't possibly go back through every single email, but I did find my favorite. It jumped out at me. And I know all of you have heard this email before or might even remember it unless you were on summer break when we talked about it. And this one starts off, "Hey, Gabe and Connor, I'm a math professor living in San Diego County who regularly listens to your show." And I'm not going to read the whole thing because some of you have heard this. This was the email from the first person ever to visit our studio, to visit Bonn, Germany, to visit Gabe and me.
Yeah.
And this was Andre Kungen, who came in, and we had him in studio to talk. I'm not going to play that clip again, but it was great.
Yeah.
Our listener from abroad, coming all the way over here, hopping in studio, and as a reward, we filled him up with DW food from the cafeteria and a lot of, I think it was creme brulee that he just loaded up on.
And he took some merch home with him, too.
Big bag of merch. Yeah, swag bag is what we called it. And that was my favorite email, because it led to a real-life encounter, and I kind of also wanted to read it as a reminder to all of you out there. The doors are open. I can't say how long they're going to be open in the sense of we might get overwhelmed with visitors and then we say enough is enough. But if you're around Bonn, Germany, send us an email, su@dw.com, and maybe we can hang out at DW, give you some food from the cafeteria.
We also get physical mail. Connor, let's not forget that. And I'm going to toss one over to you. We each got here from Beatrice, who writes us a lot, one of our loyal listeners, a card. I'm opening mine right now.
Yeah, I hadn't seen this.
"Dear Gabe and family, continued creativity and harmony that we as listeners regularly learn and aspire to. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, all the best to you and your family, Beatrice. P.S. the
illustration. I think she wrote kind of the same thing. The illustration is a good approximation of the area she lives in. It looks really pretty.
Thank you, Beatrice.
Yeah, a bunch of trees, a lake, or a bay, a harbor, with loaded ships under a moon. Very pretty. Thank you. Physical email, physical mail, snail mail, as I call it, derisively, is just fun to open these stamps with a solar eclipse on it.
Par of Avian.
Yeah, it's just very different. Thank you for that very nice letter.
You've got a song?
Only other thing before we get into some of our favorite clips from the year, only other thing we have here, I thought I would play my favorite song of the year that was on the show. Obviously, there's all sorts of new music out there. You all have your favorite songs. This is not a chart topper. It's not the Billboard Hot 100. This was a song I played on the show. We're going to play it in a minute as we start getting into our favorite clips of the year. So hold your horses. It's coming. But the backdrop to it, it was one of a couple of different songs I played this year. In this case, I got the email from a guy named John, who's, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'll paraphrase it. He's basically saying, "I love, love, love the show. but he's kind of, there's something that's driving him nuts. And namely, there was a song at the end of one of our episodes, a couple months back now, and he fell in love with it.
Hmm.
And it wasn't on the internet, or at least the app he used to the app listened to the song to try to identify it. I use Shazam. There are other apps for this. It wasn't finding it. And could I, Connor, please help him find this song? And then that kind of started driving me nuts because I have a terrible way of finding music. There's a data bank that I go to. It's kind of like spelunking in a cave. You walk in and look around and you pick and listen to random stuff. That's how I do it. So I'd found this song and then I could not find it again. I was looking for John. And then I changed my thinking and thought, wait, what do I do when I get music from this database? I have to download it somewhere. I went back through all those downloads, found it for John, sent it to him. He bought the CD from the artist. That piece, by the way, is called, or the one you're about to hear, Midnight Electric by Abe Stewart. And to finish this off, I'm going to finish it with a New Year's resolution that John kind of threw at me. He's like, look, when you put music into your shows, nobody knows how to find it. Could you maybe put that in the YouTube description list so that we can find it in the future? That is my New Year's resolution for 2026 for Science Unscripted.
Your professional one.
My professional one. Yeah. Private ones, those are different. Professional one, put the names of the songs in the YouTube description so y'all can find them. I'm not going to drag it out any longer. Here is the favorite song, my favorite song of 2026 professionally. And for all of you out there, as we head into our favorite clips of the year, enjoy. Gabe, have you heard anyone say this? This seems like a pretty new thing to be saying.
Yeah.
And I've heard it. I've seen it a lot on the internet, more on the internet than I've heard it. Somebody talking about getting the ick. Yeah, the ick. Have you heard someone say that?
Not that exact word, but that emotion or that feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This is a sudden and visceral aversion to a romantic partner. That's how it's being used.
Okay. So referring to the person that they're going out with or the person that they're close to right now or in a relationship with. Ugh.
Yeah. Or not even necessarily with. They might be thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about getting together with him and then, I don't know, I just kind of got the ick. That's how you use it. That's how I've heard it. That's how I've seen it online. And it feels relatively new. It's a new way to describe something that we all kind of intuitively understand. But what is it exactly? What is it? And that's what this study is about.
What is it?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to get to, man.
Come on, man.
Well, first of all, I'm going to debunk what I said 2 seconds ago about it being new. I thought it was new. It's not new. The authors of the paper have a couple of examples right in the top to make it clear. This has been happening since the mid-1990s. And that confirms, I went to Google Ngram because I was like, when did people start saying ick like that? I'll give you this graph, Gabe.
To me, to be fair, Connor, the mid-90s feels like yesterday, so.
It was not. That graph makes it clear. It happened in the mid-90s.
And then it just went straight up. So this is a graph. There are a couple of little uptakes between 1880 and 1980, but then in the mid-90s, boom, goes straight up.
Yeah, and there was one, they have quite a few examples. One in particular I think may have caused that. It was an episode from, the study is from just outside of Los Angeles, California in the United States. So a lot of the cultural references here are from the U.S., but they are international as well.
Yeah.
From the TV show Friends.
I'll be there for you.
It did include that song, yeah. And so there was one episode in season one called The One with the Ick Factor. And this is where Monica, one of the characters in the show, she hooks up with a guy and they're laying in bed after doing the deed. And he's got this hairy chest and he looks like he's an older guy. And he goes on to tell her that he's a senior, but not at university. He's a senior in high school. And this gives her the ick. This is like, what have I done? She's instantly, viscerally disgusted by him. But this fact, it doesn't matter. She liked him before. She hooked up with him.
Possibly because if he's in high school, this might be statutory rape.
The show doesn't frame it that way, but yes, obviously. But she's more disgusted with this fact. It revolts her. So she's turned off. It's done. There's another example they give. I wish I could play this for you, but it would be against copyright. Jerry Seinfeld in the TV show Seinfeld. He goes on a date with a woman. Every time they cut away from her and her hands reach to do something, they've clearly used a male actor who does a lot of work. He's got those really thick.
I know the term for this, man hands.
Yeah, that was the show. And so she breaks some bread for him, and you see these man hands. She gets an eyelash off his cheek and these gigantic man hands. And so Jerry Seinfeld developed the ick. Apparently there was Sex in the City, a show I didn't watch, but Carrie at one point hooks up with a guy, and then afterwards he writes and plays a love song for her. She gets the ick. These are all, this is the ick. This is what we're discussing today. But again, they're all like, to get more concretely in line with what the way people use it today, the researchers did two things. First of all, they went to TikTok and they looked for the hashtag the ick. They looked for the easiest way to find out who's talking about this and what are they saying. And so they looked at 84 videos. It's not too many videos, to be honest, mm-hmm. But more than 3 million views. So these videos have been seen quite a lot. And then they went through and they categorically listed what are they talking about when they talk about the ick. And it was very different for women and men. I'll go through the list that they compiled. For women, the highest percentage of, or the one that was most frequent for when they got the ick from a guy, was when he laid his head on my shoulder.
Huh.
That was called gender incongruent. They didn't think it was manly and they got the ick.
Wow.
Or did this traditional idea of what men are supposed to do.
I do that all the time.
Number two, maybe you do this too, Gabe, Shazamming a song while he was in a nightclub. So he hears a cool song, pulls out his phone, tries to figure out which song it is. That gave quite a few women the ick, which surprised. I was like, oh, I could see myself doing that. That'd be something I would do.
Well, yeah, as a natural-born journalist to figure things out.
A natural-born journalist. Number three on the list, saying, wow, without me, whenever I would tell him that I did anything.
Oh, got it.
Right? Pretty annoying. Next one on the list was he wore jorts.
I don't know what those are.
I like the word. He wore jorts, which is a fashion
jean
faux pas.
Shorts or
jean
what?
Shorts.
Okay, got
that
it.
Gave him the ick. He loudly shushed another girl, and that's a clear sign of misogynism, right? That one gave it like a small sign that, ugh, something, just that little action, something's mm-hmm. really wrong. The last one I'll mention, because Gabe, I think you should be aware of this.
Uh-oh.
Seeing his butt crack when he bent over gave them the ick. So watch out for that, because I've seen yours quite a bit. It doesn't give me the ick, for the future.
Oh,
now, men, when did men get the ick? When they've discovered that the person they were into or possibly dating was into astrology. To be clear, we're not talking astronomy. Astronomy is celestial objects as a science. Astrology is when you believe that stars that are light years away mm-hmm. and planets, which are hundreds of millions of kilometers away, are affecting my mood and my prospects on luck. That's astrology. Guys are not into that. It gives them the ick.
Horoscopes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Another one. I thought this was unfair. Two of them were unfair. Girls tripping. Like, I think physically tripping, falling down. That gave them the ick.
Huh.
And another one, totally unfair. Her feet didn't reach the floor. Physical appearance. So I think she's shorter.
She's too short.
Yeah. I thought both of those were awful.
That's ick.
Yeah. That's ick to be feeling that way. When women use weird slang, or when she spits her gum in the trash like a guy, or adds cringy captions on her Instagram pictures, or wears too much makeup or fake tanner. Those gave guys the ick. So
now we know, Connor. We know.
No, those are the actions that kind of lead to it. And then I'll just go through this quickly. Part two was about, okay, but who's feeling that? Because not everyone feels that the same way. Who is it that gets the ick?
Yeah.
There they went to surveys. 75 men, 50 women in the surveys. First of all, women are more likely to have experienced the ick, and mm-hmm. that substantiates something that I felt. It felt like I was hearing it more from women. It was at a rate of 75% to 57%. Then what they did, and this is the most interesting part of the whole study, is they took that list that I just told you about of the things that give you the ick,
mm-hmm.
and then they asked people, do you, on a scale of 1 to 5, do you feel that based on you see a guy's butt crack?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a 1, not very ick, or is it a 5, like total ick, right? Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, there's a connection between the extent to which you feel that ick and your levels of disgust, narcissism, and perfectionism. The more...
What kinds of people based on personality? Okay.
Yes. The more you tend to feel disgust, normally in day-to-day activities, the more you're going to feel this and at a higher rate. The same is true if you're a perfectionist, but this here they're saying perfectionism toward others, that you expect perfection.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. Obviously, they're going to be more grossed out or disgusted when they see this happening. Also true with narcissism, but not at the same frequency. There are some people who are going to experience this a lot more, and it limits their romantic possibilities. That's one of the chief findings. It may make it more difficult to find a mate, and it may, I'm quoting them, also lead to overly rigid rejection standards, and it may be connected to narcissism as well. It may be that if you're feeling this all the time, there's some stuff that you need to work on with yourself as you continue to, I don't know, navigate the dating scene. If you're interested in the study, it's very readable, very interesting, just published in the May Personality and Individual Differences Journal. It's called The Ick,
yeah.
Disgust, Sensitivity, Narcissism, and Perfectionism in Mate Choice Thresholds.
And maybe it gives you, Connor Dillon, some things to think about as to ways to better yourself. If my butt crack gives you the ick.
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Okay.
So that, I think, and it brings me joy, actually, if I can say that. It's a sign that the world is still a funny place and funny things happen. It's the opposite, Gabe.
We are going to stick with seeing through bullshit in our next study.
Oh, yeah, because what I just talked about was that.
Because this is actually a thing. I didn't know that this was a scientific concept. Pseudo-profound bullshit.
Pseudo-profound
bullshit. I'm going to read you a sentence right now. Tell me if you think that this is profound. Hidden meaning transforms unparalleled abstract beauty.
Whoa, that hurts to hidden meaning
transforms unparalleled abstract beauty.
Unparalleled abstract beauty. It could be true in some very specific cases. I'm looking at an abstract painting and an unparalleled, meaning it's only in this painting, hidden beauty will transform it. That could happen, but I don't. Anyone who says that...
This sentence is syntactically correct. The sentence from a grammatical and syntactical perspective makes sense. It has zero substance. It means nothing. It's zero meaning.
It could. I would debate. I think it could, but the person, it, well, the person
thing,
saying
the thing that this sentence does is it sounds smart.
Yeah.
It sounds deep. It sounds profound. It's not. Okay? It is pseudo-profound bullshit. There is, I did not know this. There is a science, there's a meter for this. A receptivity, a bullshit receptivity meter. And a meta-analysis was done at a number of universities down in Chile. Between the years 2015 and 23, they looked at every single study that used this receptivity meter. And what they were looking for, I find this really interesting, is what kinds of people are receptive to this kind of bullshit.
Who would listen to that sentence and nod along and think
it's really profound.
Yeah, and respect the person saying it.
Yes. And of these 13,000 participants in these studies between 2015 and 2023, these are U.S. and Canadian people reading these sentences or hearing these sentences and being asked, are they profound? There were four different things they were looking at. Cognitive reflection, verbal intelligence, belief systems, and thinking styles. And what they found was that people who said when they heard the sentence that is profound, that's deep, they are more likely to believe in conspiracy theories, religious and paranormal claims, and had greater faith in intuition. Their verbal intelligence was lower, and they had lower arithmetic skills, so better, they were worse at math. But the strongest negative correlation between the people, or I guess the strongest correlation between the people who thought there was profundity in those sentences was something called cognitive reflection. So your ability to go against what you feel is right and use reasoning skills to actually get to the truth That was the biggest difference. Or the people who had that were the least likely to think that there was depth or profundity in those sentences.
Self-awareness or even just the knowledge that I'm a fallible human. That's what that last one sounds like to me. That
right.
If I know I've made errors of judgment in the past, I've been tricked in the past, I've read something I thought was true that was later debunked. If you can step outside and look at yourself that way, you're more likely to not fall victim.
People who are more reflective and analytical and think for themselves. That's it. So critical thinking, learning logic and reasoning, and thinking for yourself based on logic and reasoning, and not something that you read online and someone that's telling you to think for yourself, yet preaching to you. You know what I mean? You get a lot of that online. And I think that's at the heart of why a study like this is very important. It sounds kind of funny. Oh, yeah, pseudo bullshit. No, it's really important now because we are absolutely inundated by content. And it is very, 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 it's becoming more and more important to be able to differentiate, sift through what is bullshit and what is not.
One influencer there comes to mind, and that's Jordan Peterson. I try not to watch any of his content or to even mention his name because it causes further promotion that I don't support or advocate. Yeah. And yet that sort of pseudo profundity, or however you say that, when I have watched a clip, I've sometimes stopped it and thought, what was that sentence? What did that actually say? And for anyone who has been forced to sit through a lecture that just didn't work for you, sometimes that is a reason. It's a lot of words. It's like a big word salad.
Yeah.
But when you pull the pieces apart, it's like, I don't think that says anything.
Yeah.
Politicians. Maybe that's different, though.
Or podcasters
like us.
When we tell you guys out there, just think for yourselves. Take that with a grain of salt. Or how about this? Start by reading the actual study.
There you go.
Relationship between bullshit cognitive skills and belief systems, a meta-analytic review. Again, in the journal Applied Cognitive Psychology, and again, from universities in Chile.
Last thing we have to do here, Gabe.
Yeah.
You know what? This time, correctly enunciate every single letter.
Okay, I got it. S. U. At. D. Double. U.
I'm just going to play a little bit of music that it's very similar to what I hear every other morning, every couple of mornings when after I walk my son to elementary school, I take a turn, pick up like a bread roll from the bakery, get that done. And then there's usually something from this local supermarket. It's like, it's a small one. And I walk in there to pick something up. And at like 7:45 in the morning, it's blasting this kind of music, which is Schlager music, German music.
You know how I feel about Schlager music, right?
How do you?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's Germany's version, I would say, I hate to generalize here, but it's Germany's version of country music.
Yeah.
It's musically, harmoniously, and rhythmically very simple, lyrically incredibly simple.
Same themes.
Cliché one after another. I love it.
But it feels good. It puts
love
you,
it.
Yeah, you and I, the mics were off for a second.
Oh, we were
bouncing in our chairs.
We were jiving here.
Okay,
yeah.
So the only thing I have to say here is that is a great feeling. And it that's part of the reason I like going to that supermarket, even to buy one little thing, like a little thing of margarine.
Just a little shot of Schlager?
Yeah, it is. For me, it's a little hit. Yeah. At the same time, something else is happening in that supermarket. There are a couple of employees. They have maybe a grand total of 4 employees. That's how small this thing is. And one of them, she's a woman who's maybe a couple years younger than us, rewind a year or two ago, and she was really smiley and friendly, and something has changed, and she's not anymore. She's like, she seemed, things aren't going well for her, I think. I would never say that to her because I don't know her. I don't, you can't start a conversation like that with a cashier.
What is it?
It may be connected to the music. That's what I thought of when I saw this study from Ohio State University.
Okay.
And that's kind of like a long rambling introduction to this study,
yeah,
but that's why it caught my attention. It's in the Journal of Applied Psychology. It's called In Sync or Out of Tune, The Effects of Workplace Music Misfit on Employees. So what they did, what the study did...
I see. So yeah. She probably doesn't like the Schlager.
Well, I have to...
And is subjected to it on a daily basis, and it's killing her.
40 hours a week. I have thought this plenty of times walking in there, that I like a good little quick hit of this music.
Yeah,
it's like an injection of good feelings, and then you walk out. But if it's 8 hours straight every day,
it's an important thing to say about Schlager music. Is my feelings about it are probably pretty rare. Most Germans don't like.
No, I would correct you. Most Germans our age don't like.
Our age, yeah.
Yeah, most like go from age 50 to 60 to 70 to 80, and that
they love it. Yeah.
Yeah, but our age, it's not cool.
And ask a younger German, like a 20-year-old, they're gonna probably hate it.
So music. Study. There were two studies in one. I'll just get through them real quickly. One of them had like 150 people in it, and they were not actually at the workplace. So they said, okay, fill out what kind of music you like. And really they looked at volume, emotional intensity, speed, and complexity. Hmm. And then they had them do some tasks and put one of two playlists on their ears. One of them matched what they liked, the other didn't. Surprise, surprise. If it was not a match, there was an increase in unpleasant emotions, feelings, and a sense of exhaustion kind of set in them.
Hmm.
It has a real effect on you if the music you like isn't what you are being bombarded with. This, though, was just, they were doing creative tests. They weren't really working. So experiment two, or part two, was to take it into the actual workplace. And here they had people in healthcare, in retail, people who worked in dining and restaurants, 3 times a day, fill out emails asking them, hey, wherever you are, when you're working, there's music, does it line up with you? And what they found there was very similar, except specifically on those days, they were more likely to engage in actions that hurt the company.
Oh, wow. Straight up, take revenge.
Yeah. And to do fewer positive things when they were out of sync with the music. Now, the reason Kathleen Keeler, she's the investigator behind this, that she's looking into this, she's an assistant professor of management and human resources. So it's kind of the business angle of this.
Yeah.
How do you make employees happy so that they don't intentionally harm the company because they're so angry at this bad music? And the
find music that everybody likes?
Can you do that, though?
Like elevator Muzak? What is that called?
Muzak,
that stuff,
yeah,
that kind of just blends into the background? You don't even realize it's even there almost?
She had 3 suggestions, and okay, and 2 of them were evidence-based. The other one, she's just kind of speculating. One was try to strike a balance. And what I was thinking of there is, for example, you hear about this a lot during Christmas time, that employees who have to hear Christmas music nonstop, they get so sick of, for example, All I Want for Christmas is You by Mariah Carey. That's the most famous example.
Yeah.
But perhaps you could stick to the Christmas music because it does make people happy, but do a mixture of playlists with different kinds of Christmas. Mix it up. That would, yeah, be one thing. Create places. Make sure there are places at the workplace where they can escape that sound or those sounds, and or provide headphones or
Christmas
inserts.
Music-free zones or something.
Yeah. Like my ear pods, or when you slide them in, you can activate them so that they noise cancel everything until I talk.
Great.
And then that way you don't lose the conversations that you need. And then her suggestion, which is based on no evidence, is she's just like, look, if it's possible, let them listen to their own music. Why not? Right? That they're going to listen to what they like,
of
usually.
Course.
They're not going to listen to what they hate. And then I'm going to jump on to Kathleen Keeler's 3 suggestions and add a 4th and say, why not, instead of just saying music, include podcasts, like the Science Unscripted podcast.
Have it running all day long, just on repeat?
Yes, at the supermarket or whatever. So maybe they'll like, no, where, that they can personally listen to it.
Where it ruins people's moods, makes them physiologically unwell, and they're taking revenge on the whole world,
yeah, all because of us.
Yeah.
No, if you like if that would help you work better throughout the day, then you should be allowed to do it.
Scripted. DW, made for minds.